language that everybody here can easily understand.
Just because it's late doesn't mean we're done yet.
And this turns up. That's a penalty.
And the quarterback, you kidding me, coach?
There's plenty more hits to dish out.
Well, he really hit the shit out of that one, didn't he? Look at that. He hit the f***ing ball. That gets a free steak.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX. Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology.
And by BetUS, the original online sportsbook.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Patrick Creighton.
This is the only live, local, and consistent evening sports radio show here in the city of Houston. Late Hits, ESPN 97.5. Patrick Creighton with you, 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN on the John Billison line, on the text line, on the X-tweeter. At P. Creighton 1. As Josh Vance on the other side of the glass pulling the double duty. Josh Van on the X-tweeter. At IMJ Chevy on the Twitch stream, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. ESPN97.5.com, ESPN97 app, tell ESPN, help, tell Alexa, and tell Google to play ESPN. And then you can take us everywhere you want to go. And we all know that you definitely want to. So you know what? It was a mediocre weekend. The Houston Astros disappointed us more than they didn't. The Houston Texans disappointed us more than they didn't. At least it rained. I mean, that was nice. It was pretty cool leaving to go to the stadium. It was only 75 degrees. I was like, ooh, this feels nice. It lasted for like 20 minutes. And then it was all over. Then we had to get back to 100. Oh, well. It's nice while it lasted. Getting our stream set up in the studio, the one that I have that nobody else has. Love this. I don't think anybody else has figured out that my information apparently was stored in there. I didn't store it, but it self-stored. So anybody could have clicked it and it would have worked, but they don't know. They don't know. Astros and the Orioles tonight for three. Look, this is a big series for the Astros in this regard. If they handle their business against the Birds at home, it can kind of create enough of a buffer. Because, you know, they're going to have to play the Royals again. And Lord knows, the Astros just don't want to show up to play bad teams that they should knock the crap out of. No, they don't show up for these games. But usually they show up to play good teams. So if they can handle their business, take at least two of three here from the O's, give themselves a little buffer as they go into that deadly series with the Royals, before they face the coffee sippers, before they face the D-bags, and give themselves enough of a buffer that the coffee sippers and the junk grabbers would not be able to catch them for the division. Verlander on the hill tonight. You know, the biggest weakness for the Orioles is starting pitching. You get to the starting pitching, you get some runs early on them. Now, the Orioles' bullpen is good, but the last time these teams played, the Astros did get to that bullpen. They did get to that all-star closer. And once you get to them once, you know you can get to them anytime. The Astros took two of three from the Orioles in Camden Yards all the way back in August. It was a whole month. It was 5 weeks ago. An eternity in this internet age we live in. So, if we can handle some business against the Baltimore Orioles, life gets a whole lot easier. But Josh, we're all excited for Texans home opener. and getting ready to see, you know, hey, look, the defense looked pretty good in week one. Is how's that gonna play out here in week two? Look, we knew the offensive line was a mess, right? The offensive line's a mash unit. We knew they were gonna stink. We didn't know the defense was gonna stink. We didn't know that the defense that had played pretty well against the run in Baltimore was going to, do a 2022 redo and part like the damn Red Sea every time whatever mid-running back that the Colts were going to throw out there was going to take a hand. I mean, it was embarrassing. The first drive the Colts had with Anthony Richardson at the helm was entirely too easy. With a bunch of little dink and dunk short throws with guys who were, if they weren't college open, they were high school open. Like, I don't know how guys are getting this wide open. You're within 12 yards of the line of scrimmage. How the hell are people that wide open and nobody around for 6 yards? And they literally walk down a field. And then as they get into the red zone, it's like everybody forgot, oh, Anthony Richardson, he likes to run. And they create a running lane you could have driven a damn semi through. Delayed quarterback draw, touchdown. Then, of course, on the Texans' first possession, the offensive line, well, parked cars. Rusted out Yugos. And while, yes, I would have preferred if C.J. Stroud did not get sacked and then lose the football, it would be really nice if three defenders were not hitting him before he can even finish his damn dropback. When three guys from three different angles are all slamming the quarterback at the same time, fumbles are going to happen because there's too many bodies going too many different directions. And all you needed was, I don't know, one of your five linemen to not get smoked on that play. Just one. They got smoked on the first play. They got smoked on the third play. I mean, look, we knew the line would be bad, but they were beyond bad. I mean, I don't know that line, those five guys, I don't know those five guys would have started for Georgia. I don't know those five guys would have started for A&M. It was that bad. Guys were just getting shoved. Wasn't Josh Jones supposed to be a tackle? Because he was woeful. He was woeful. And I know George Fant was banged up and playing through a little bit of an injury, but holy hell, he stunk. He stunk. And in a recap of essentially the last three seasons, every time Indy put hats on hats, so you have five offensive linemen, they'd line up five defensive linemen. Every time it was hats on hats and one-on-one blocking, the Texans' line got mauled. Anytime there was a blitz, they got mauled. Anytime there was an overload, they got mauled. Hell, anytime there was a corner blitz, they didn't even try to block him. He just came free. I mean, there's nothing like you run a play action, and as CJ turns around, he walks right into the waiting arms of an oncoming rusher coming full speed, trying to destroy him. I mean, you're the weak side tackle. Your one job, don't let your guy break free. Push him around the edge. Push him wide. Push him short. Just don't let him walk right past you. Nah. And despite the fact the offensive line was absolute trash, despite the fact that they could not open a hole for the running game no matter what, so far this season, Damien Pierce is averaging negative a half yard before initial contact. He's averaging. negative a half yard before initial contact. On average, he gets hit a half yard behind the line of scrimmage. The only holes that offensive line is making is for defenders. People are bagging on Damian Pierce. Oh, he's not a real RB1. Who the hell's an RB1 getting hit behind the line of scrimmage every time? Like, he's got to get 3 yards after he's been hit 5 times. Hell, his first carry, he got hit as he was taking the handoff. I actually had three plays like that where the running back was getting hit as he was getting the ball. Like, what the hell was going on? I understand that they're, on their tackle 4 and tackle 5, and they're on guard 3 and center 3. But we've seen backup players before, they're at least kind of average. They're not just getting steamrolled on every damn play. And despite that, it was a long shot, but still, they were a missed field goal away from, legitimately being in the game at the end. Which, of course, was the result of a complete breakdown of the offensive line leading to a sack, a field goal attempt that was blocked that they got a false start penalty on, so they got pushed back 5 yards, and then they tried it again, and then they missed it. It's another flag fest. And just, look, the offensive line is untenable. They can't run. Everybody knows they're going to throw. CJ's under pressure way too much. And way too often that pressure is basically unblocked. But what happened to the defense? Especially the run defense. What happened to those guys? How did they go from looking pretty good week 1 in Baltimore to just getting run over week 2 at home? Not by Jonathan Taylor, by freaking Zach Moss. And if you just said who, well, that's okay. Because to every other team, Zach Moss is a who? That guy is such a who, he doesn't even co-host with Josh Beard in afternoons. What the hell happened to the defense? That, to me, is a much bigger issue because that was wholly presentable. That never should have happened. Before we hit the break, got to talk about my favorite sportsbook and casino. It's BetUS.com. BetUS.com. I hit some winners. I hit some winners this week. BetUS.com. They're the only sportsbook and casino that I endorse. They're on their 30th year of being a sports betting service, and for their anniversary, they're offering up to 30 risk-free bets. It's called Bet Protect. They also offer the industry's biggest sign-up bonus at 125%. 125% of your money free when you sign up. Want to sign up with crypto? Make that a massive 200%. Sign on bonus. And with live in-game betting, you can keep the action going all day long. So don't wait. Take advantage of this 30th year offer. Up to 30 risk-free bets. It's Bet Protect. Get started today. BetUS.com or give them a call. 1-800-MY-BETUS. 1-800-MY-BETUS. Learn about all the bonuses, all the special offers. Want to learn how to sign up with crypto? Call them. 1-800-MY-BETUS. Go to BetUS.com, Sportsbook and Casino, where the game begins.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. All systems go.
Houston is all systems go.
Late Night Houston Sports Talk only happens here. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology.
And by BetUS, the original online sports book.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
Today is the 53rd anniversary of the passing of the great Jimi Hendrix. Died today in 1970. It's been 53 years since we lost maybe the greatest rock guitarist of all time. Maybe the greatest guitarist of all time. This is one of my favorite Jimmy songs. And even though it was recorded in 1968, this song actually was released in the UK in 1970 after Jimmy died. And instead of being released as Voodoo Child, it was released as Voodoo Child, like C-H-I-L-E. And it was the only number one he ever had in the UK. It hit number one November 15th of 1970. When they were recording this song in May of 1968, they actually developed this like just doing a jam. So Steve Winwood, if you know who Steve Winwood is, Spencer Davis Group, he also had his own solo career, popular in the 80s. But Steve Winwood was playing organ, and Jack Cassidy was on bass, and they're just jamming. And the next day, they come in the studio, and they're doing this little documentary for ABC TV, and they basically created the song as the cameras are rolling. So it's really a kind of a creative way that the whole song kind of came about. Also, it turns out the non-chorus lyrics for Voodoo Child, which is the normal release, and Voodoo Child, which is the UK release, the lyrics are different.
Really?
The lyrics are different. So, it's one of his best songs. Wrestling fans certainly know it as the one that Hulk Hogan used to come out to in the NWO days. But Jimmy very sadly passed away 53 years ago today. Now, I don't know what happened in the defense. And I don't know why the run defense suddenly was so just non-existent. But maybe we got to give credit to Shane Steichen and the things that he did offensively to attack the Texans. Because you know what? If you're trying to think of, you know, I didn't really hear Will Anderson's name called that much. Well, that's because you didn't. They did a terrific job of neutralizing him. And in the process, essentially neutralized the rest of the line. We're going to learn just how much Will Anderson impacts the line, because if we look at the defense yesterday, you know how many sacks they had? Zero. You know how many tackles for loss they had? Zero. Do you know how many quarterback hits they had? They had one, and it was from Will Anderson. The Texans defense did not get any penetration whatsoever all frickin' day. And that allowed Anthony Richardson to sit back and find wide open receivers. And it allowed Gardner Minshew to sit back and find wide open receivers. It was entirely too easy. And without Jimmy Ward and without Jalen Petrie, things didn't seem to work so well in the secondary, and look, when you're getting no pressure, it puts a lot more pressure on the secondary. But you know what? They picked on MJ Stewart all damn day. And I think he had one pass breakup, wasn't official because it was half a drop and half a shove. But MJ Stewart didn't have a good day. And part of that could be because guys had all damn day to run. But he didn't have a good day. Also evidenced by the fact that I didn't see Derek Stingley get beat a whole lot. I didn't see them throw at Derek Stingley a whole lot. But they threw at MJ Stewart. And that's why he led the team with 10 tackles. Because he was usually tackling the guy who just beat him. Henry Toto, if he's going to play over Christian Harris, and I know Harris has been dinged up, if he's going to play over Christian Harris, he's got to get a lot better at run defense. He was too often out of position, too often on a bad angle, too often getting blocked and unable to get off that block. If he's going to be the guy next to Denzel Perryman, they need more out of him. I know he's a rookie. Rookie's going to make mistakes. I'm, you know, not saying he can't get better, saying he needs to. You know, it is extremely difficult to cover receivers for unended periods of time. And when you can't get any pressure on the quarterback and they have all day, it's really difficult. Maybe that's part of the problem. But the Texans' defense was a huge letdown yesterday as they gave up 5.5 yards per carry on the ground and about 7 yards per attempt in the air. It was not a great day for the Texans defense. Coming up next, we're going to get into some Texas college football with our buddy Sam Kahn, the college football expert of The Athletic, joins us next.
ESPN 97.5. God listens to us too. Back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's Late Hits with Patrick Creighton, presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology,
and by BetUS, the original online sports book.
All right, joining us right now on the HRMP guest line, senior college football writer for The Athletic. He is the college football expert. What's up, buddy? Sam Kahn Jr. What's up, Sammy? How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Dude, anytime we get to talk about college football, I am excited, and I'm certainly excited to talk to you about some college football here in the great state of Texas. Let's start with the Aggies. You know, apparently, you know, we carry their games and, you know, flagship station for the Aggies and all the whatnot. Aggies put it on Louisiana Monroe on Saturday. What is a big giant win when you just completely annihilate a team that, you know, you should annihilate? But it's A&M, and last year they didn't annihilate teams that they were supposed to annihilate. What do you take away from a game like this?
Yeah, first of all, it's a good rebound for them because that Miami game in week two was a disappointment. They got physically beat. And you always want to see how your team responds in those instances. And they responded really well. This is an overmatched team, but they didn't let that Miami loss linger and turn into and beat them twice, so to speak. And, you know, they played a relatively clean game. I thought Connor Wegman was terrific. You saw some other receivers emerge in this game, and defensively, I thought they made some plays. You know, for the most part, I think you only had you know, really one or two big plays in the game that, that you know, you would have liked to have back defensively. But I think they did what they were supposed to do. So they've had two games so far against the, these overmatched opponents that they've dominated and played clean ball. And that's what you want to see because, like you said, they didn't even do that last year. Last year against App State, they lost. They didn't look good against UMass. They didn't look great against Sam Houston. So now they're at a point where they're at least looking better against that level of competition. Now comes the real part. Now you get Auburn coming in. You get Arkansas in a couple of weeks. You get Alabama in a few more weeks. And that's going to be where we really learn how much this team has grown and if they can respond in the way that, that they need to. This is a team that's talented enough to win all of those games. It's a matter of whether or not they're going to be disciplined enough, execute well enough, and if the coaches are going to have them ready to go.
Sam, we got some of this Jekyll and Hyde again from the fourth-ranked Longhorns who, you know, we saw them against Rice where it seemed like they needed three quarters to figure out how they were going to run their offense. They were terrific against Alabama, and then they needed four quarters to figure out how they were going to run their offense against Wyoming. What's going on with the Longhorns? You know, I mean, they win by 21, but they scored all those points in the fourth quarter, whereas going into the fourth quarter, it's a 10-10 game against a team they were 30-point favorites to beat.
Yeah, certainly it's not ideal. You want to look better than that. But I'll offer a couple things. One, this was certainly, I think, an emotional challenge for them because coming down from the high of beating Alabama and having everybody pat them on the back all week, and I think Steve Sarkisian even said as he was walking onto the field on Saturday night before the game, fans were still congratulating them about the win from the week before. So everybody's mind in Austin was on the, what had happened before, not what was about to happen on the field. And I think when you're dealing with 18 to 23-year-olds, that's just human nature. This was not just a big win for Texas. This was a massive win and probably their biggest win in the post-Mack Brown era. So having a little bit of a letdown and coming out a little sloppy early on, I really wasn't surprised. And then when you combine that, this is a Wyoming team, yes, a massive underdog, but this is actually a good football team. This is a team that already beat Texas Tech earlier this year. They were 2-0. They're really well coached. They recruit well. They develop really good players. Obviously, not the talent level that Texas does, but they're not a pushover by any stretch. And Texas certainly struggled with them for a little bit. But I did like that at the end, they were able to get themselves out of it. They were able to execute and finally break out late in the game and really finish strong. But there certainly is some focus. There's some focus. They had a false start on the very first play of the game, three snap penalties, which you didn't see against Alabama. And so that tells me more about their psyche. And I think the biggest challenge for Steve Sarkisian is they enter Big 12 play. They're the Big 12 favorite. They're the team that everybody thinks is going to win this conference. In order to do that, they're going to have to start faster. They're going to have to play cleaner early in games so that they're not having to dig themselves out of a hole waiting.
Sam Collins Jr., the college football tech expert, senior college football writer with The Athletic, joining us on the HRMP guest line. Sam, the Horned Frogs at TCU, who took a lot of gruff about their week one loss against Colorado, they stomped a mud hole in the Houston Cougars on Saturday. This game was never competitive. Your thoughts on TCU, who ran for 250 and threw for 314, and, you know, is Dane in trouble?
Yeah, I'll say on TCU, I think if you're Sonny Dykes and you're Kendall Browse, keep running the football. They ran for over 200 against Colorado. They ran for 250 against Houston. I think that's the identity of this team. I would like them. They had a good performance. I would like to see them be a little cleaner offensively than they were. But this is going to be a huge week for them too, coming up against SMU. But this is a good team. Certainly, they were embarrassed by the Colorado loss on a national stage. But I still think the team has a lot of talent and a lot of potential if they can just clean some things up offensively. As for Houston, it's disappointing. We're in year five of the Dana Holgorsen era now, and the results are not good at this point. They had one really good season in 2021. They were all right in 2022 at 8-5. It was a little bit disappointing. And I think we knew that it was going to be a challenge this year because they're taking a step up in competition. But there's a difference in my mind of it being a challenge and then getting beat the way they got beat on Saturday. They didn't score an offensive touchdown, which hasn't happened since 2014. You're talking about a team that Houston got doubled in offensive yardage, more than doubled, 564 to 280. They're 0-for-4 on fourth down. They're 4-for-15 on third down. That's just not – this doesn't cut it. And we're at a point in this program where you would feel like that this team should be good enough to be competitive and to be in a game with a team like TCU. Granted, TCU went to the national championship game last year, but this is not the same TCU that we're talking about. This is a little bit of a different team, and you would have liked to see Houston be a lot better. And I think there has to be, I imagine, a sense of urgency on Cullen Boulevard right now. Because I know Dana Holgorsen is obviously, you know, at the top of that list in terms of people who are trying to get this thing right. But I understand the fans who are frustrated with the results because they're just playing bad right now.
I'd like to thank Baylor for writing a big fat check to my alma mater, LIU, to go there and get their butts kicked. When I was at LIU, we were a D3 school. Now they are a fledgling D1 program that really shouldn't be a D1 program. But Baylor was kind enough to write us a fat check and kick our asses. The loss to Texas State was embarrassing, but then they came back and they played tough against a top 15 team in Utah before they just ran out of gas in the fourth quarter. What are the Baylor Bears to you?
Yeah, I don't know. This is a team I'm still trying to figure out. I obviously, like you said, the first game was an embarrassment for them because they didn't just lose. They got pretty well outplayed by Texas State. The Utah game, I love the energy they came out with, and they were much more competitive, but so many key mistakes down the stretch, including throwing a pick late in the game that ended up serving Utah their game winner in the final moment. Then last week against LIU, I feel like I'm still missing some energy and some enthusiasm. There's not an edge to this team that I remember seeing a couple of years ago when they won the Big 12 championship. And so when they host Texas this weekend. And if they start against Texas like they started against LIU or the way they started against Texas State, that game's going to get ugly in a hurry. I don't know what it is, and Dave Randy even said it on Saturday that he felt like they had three of their best practices since he's been there in the middle of the week. But for whatever reason, that didn't translate on the field on Saturday. They were able to run the ball pretty well, and I think they're going to try to do that as well, some more on Saturday. And Blake Chafin, the starting quarterback, still out with an injury. But they've got a lot of growing to do, and I will be really interested to see how they come out and what type of energy they play with early on the game against Texas. Because if you can't get up and you can't play with a whole lot of enthusiasm for a Texas team that right now is number three in the polls, and I think that says a lot about where you are in the program.
Sam, I got to ask you about one more, and I have to do it because my longtime, very good friend, radio partner, Nate Griffin, he calls games for Rice University, and the Rice Owls laid a beatdown on Texas Southern. The Owls are now 2-1 after having beaten UH. Last week, they beat Texas Southern. This week, look, JT Daniels is probably the best quarterback that they've had in, well, longer than I could possibly go back for Rice football. What are the Rice Owls? Is this a team that can legitimately be a proper bowl team this year? And do they need to be a 6-plus win team for Mike Bloomgren to keep his job?
Yeah, I think you need to get some postseason for sure, and I think it's achievable. I see some real progress here. Even the game that they lost against Texas early, you saw some really impressive effort defensively. They had Texas O line confused, and that they were in that game early until Texas kind of turned it on in the third quarter, and then you saw them jump out to a 28-0 lead against Houston, and obviously win in double overtime, and then against TSU. TSU was a team 2 years ago that they only beat by 14. They go up and beat them by 52 on Saturday. That's the largest margin of victory they've had in any game against any team since 2008. It's been a long time since Rice has beaten somebody by 52. So those are all positive signs. And I think JT Daniels, you mentioned, I think that was such a huge acquisition for them, because if there's one position that they've really struggled to find consistency on this team, it's quarterback. They've had so many injuries and so many changes of that position multiple times in the last 2 years. They've played three different quarterbacks multiple games. And so JT is a guy who's a veteran, who's got a tremendous amount of talent. He understands the offense that they're running. He's a really good fit for the kind of offense they're running. And you see him throw for 400 against Houston. He throws for four touchdowns last week. He gives them some real stability at that position. Him and Luke McCaffrey have become a really good tandem. And I think, yeah, I think this team has a legitimate chance to go to bowl. And I think they can even be a little bit better than that. I think they can actually be competitive in the American Athletic Conference as long as JT's playing at this level and that defense continues to play the way we've seen it play to this point. And Brian Smith, their defense coordinator, has done a really good job since he's been there. They got a chance to be competitive in this conference. And I think Rice has definitely got some reason for optimism this year.
He is Sam Kahn Jr., senior writer for The Athletic. He is the college football expert. You want to know about it in college football in Texas? He knows. And you should definitely be following him at S. Kahn Jr. On X Twitter, S. Kahn Jr., S. Kahn Jr. And, of course, check him out in The Athletic. Sam, always appreciate your time. Love hearing about college football with you. We'll talk soon, my friend.
Thanks for having me. You take care.
All right, Sam Kahn Jr. of The Athletic. Talk some college football with us here on Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Now, coming up next, we have a new sponsor on the program. And it turns out that this sponsor is actually connected to a very prominent sports media personality. We'll tell you about it next.
You found ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I can feel it.
I can feel it down in my plums. They're getting a nice bluish hue.
This is Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Presented by Dr. Jennifer Joseph, Get Physical RX, Dr. Krista Reyes, Texas Sinus and Snoring Audiology,
and by BetUS, the original online sports book.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Patrick Creighton.
So we are paying a little tribute to Jimi Hendrix tonight. Passed away on this day in 1970. Another one of Jimmy's most famous songs, actually written by Bob Dylan. This is a Bob Dylan song. It was written by Dylan and on his eighth studio album called John Wesley Harding from 1967. And Dylan's version, of course, because Dylan's a great, you know, like folk-type singer. Dylan's version, acoustic. And Jimmy was a huge Bob Dylan fan. You know, Jimmy's background being in a lot of blues and folk and that type of stuff. Jimmy is the guy who was really big into Dylan. And this was cover that he did for his third and final studio album, Electric Ladyland. This came out in 1968, so it was only 6 months after Dylan's version. But it was a top 20 single for Jimi Hendrix. It is considered by Rolling Stone did their 500 greatest songs of all time. And in the 2021 version of that top 500 songs, the song is number 40. Yeah, Jimmy had a lot of covers early in his career. Just the way that he could use, you know, over-modulated amps, the feedback, the natural recourses, and instead of having it just being noise, turned it into something just incredible. Had never been done before. That's part of what makes him so amazing. Now, you guys might have heard Colin Cowherd last week talk about what a huge hard rock, heavy metal fan that he is, and talk about how, you know, his favorite bands and his favorite songs by those bands. And here is Colin telling us how big of an AC/DC fan that he actually is.
Sure, I was more of an AC/DC, Guns N' Roses guy, but I knew of Metallica.
You were an AC/DC guy?
Oh, I loved them. Van Halen, AC/DC is all I listened to.
Van Halen is in a different category. But
no, AC/DC, Back in Black.
That was
Rock
your fire
you like
up
a
song?
Hurricane? Absolutely.
So do you listen to that driving into the herd on the Friday show?
You guys didn't listen to AC/DC. Who didn't listen to AC/DC? You were going to prep school. I was
prep
on the tough
school?
Streets.
Oh, absolutely not.
I was out there over the hill.
My family's
with
from the
tough
Caribbean.
Kids.
Okay, they weren't into this.
You were a burb
AC/DC.
Kid.
Yeah, I was suburban. Suburban.
Not
soft.
Me. I was out there making things happen.
Clearly. But
now, Colin, a huge AC/DC fan who listed his second favorite song as being Rock You Like a Hurricane, which, of course, is not AC/DC. But because Colin is Colin and he is such a huge personality, despite his incessant blunders, false statements, and absolute nonsense, Colin was able to turn his music faux pas into a huge opportunity with the great KTEL Records, which is making a comeback, and KTEL Records now advertising as a new sponsor here on Late Hits on ESPN 97.5. Wanted to give you the opportunity to listen up. This is the newest and latest from KTEL Records, the great KTEL Records. Now here advertising with us on ESPN 97.5 with their new partnership with Colin Cowherd.
KTEL Records proudly presents Colin Cowherd's Monsters of Crock, Volume 1. The definitive work of the best hard rock and heavy metal from the 70s and 80s, as put together by the man himself, the greatest hard rock and metal fan ever, Colin Cowherd. Colin shares his all-time favorites, including Metallica.
Down the basement.
Guns N' Roses. And his personal favorite, AC/DC.
Here I am, rock you like a hurricane.
Get the first volume of Colin Cowherd's Monsters of Crock for just $19.99. But wait, if you act now, get a special bonus. The first 500 orders, yeah, the first 500 orders will get a special edition autographed disc by Colin. And it will include a bonus track from another of Colin's personal favorite hard rock bands, Color Me Bad.
And this is what I'll do.
Colin Cowherd's Monsters of Crock Volume 1 isn't available in stores. The only way to get this amazing deal is to call now at 1-800-BIG-CROCK. That's 1-800-BIG-CROCK or online at monstersofcrock.com. Colin Cowherd's Monsters of Crock Volume 1, presented by KTEL Records, just $19.99. Plus shipping and handling. Make sure you get the bonus offer by ordering now. Call 1-800-BIG-CROCK or at monstersofcrock.com. Order now.
Man, that is one hell of a deal. Telling you, I wish I was able to take whatever things that I screwed up and turn it into national advertising like that and make money off of it. I mean, it's just brilliant. It's just brilliant. I wish I thought of things like this. I'll tell you, I bet you that thing winds up selling a million copies. And to be one of the first 500 and get the autographed version with the CMB, I mean, I thought that was tremendous. That was terrific, in-depth musical greatness.
He is absolutely going to make more money off of that than his Volume Network of podcasts, in my opinion.
Probably. And the spot, I mean, it just brings you right back to the 70s and the 80s, the old KTEL Records. And man, KTEL Records was huge back in the day. When I was a kid, man, there was always some kind of, you know, KTEL Records special going on. And yeah, that spot really just kind of brought back memories to exactly how it all used to be. You know, not sold in stores. You're trying. It's so hard to get. It's such a special edition. Not sold in stores. A little hat tip to my man Michael Carroll, one of our producers here, for our collaboration together. That came out absolutely perfect, and I think that we did a terrific job scripting that out and creating that spot for our new advertiser, KTEL Records, and Colin Cowherd's Monsters of Croc. And you know, I thought it was a fitting. I thought it was a fitting album name, considering 95% of what Colin says is a croc. So it really hit the nail right on the head. He also picked out, the absolute best Guns N' Roses song. Nobody's Fool. That was, just the synergy of having a song called Nobody's Fool while putting out an album specifically for fools. I mean, that is some next level genius.
Beautiful marketing.
It is some next level genius. And I hope that one day, I could do something cool like that too. Just one day, I want to be able to do something like that. Do hurry up and get your copy of Colin Cowherd's Monsters of Croc, Volume 1. Go 1-800-BIG-CROC, 1-800-BIG-CROC, or monstersofcroc.com. That's Monsters of Croc, C-R-O-C-K, Monsters of Croc. .com.
Emphasis on the R.
Croc. C-R-O-C-K. Not Monsters of Rock. Monsters of Croc. Although I do see what you did there. Coming up next, the week that was in the NFL. And oh my gosh, what did we just see on Monday Night Football? We'll get to it next.
ESPN 97.5.com. Take his pork chop.
I don't want his pork chop. I want his life.